Real people. Real opinions. Real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.
Now, I want to get back to what I was talking about today. And this is in relation to education. And I was talking about the fact that when I was young, I think in my class, only one kid went to college. And that was a class of 44 kids. There were big classes, okay, in those days. Excuse me, I have the hiccups. But anyway, 44 kids, one kid went to college. Because firstly, we couldn't afford it. We didn't have the grand system that we have nowadays. Secondly, there was no need for it. And thirdly, it was expected of you when you finished school that you went to work. Now, all of those people in my from my era and right up to kind of the mid to late 80s when college started to become more popular, most have good jobs. A lot of them are very qualified. A lot have been hugely successful. And they made and created the world around us. So where's the difference? Nowadays, there's almost this insistence that your parents encourage you to go to college. You must go to college. College has become a currency to get a good job, which shouldn't really be the case. Because at the end of the day, you know, you can get a good job without college. You can, you know, go work in a job and learn how to do the skill, or you can get an apprenticeship, or you can get, do a trainee or be a trainee in a job. There are lots, like, for example, radio is probably one of the best examples I can give you. Helena went to college. And after her second or third year, I think she came here. She learned how to be a producer on radio by working here with Mike Hogan at the time, who'd been a producer before that for me and in another radio station with me as well. With somebody else at one point as well. And that's generally Aisling, exactly the same thing. She came here, that's how she learned to do the job, by coming here, not generally by being in college. I could tell you that Aisling would probably verify she learned more here in probably 2 or 3 weeks than she learned in college in a year. I'll actually get her to answer that herself. Hold on a second.
I feel like I have to say yes now that she said that.
No, you don't have to say yes. No, I mean...
No, like, don't get me wrong. I learned a lot of things in college. I got my piece of paper, the main thing I wanted to get. I wanted to get my degree. So that was the thing for me in my own head. But I have to say, even when, like, throughout college, I was in here, you know, every Wednesday night I was, you know, Helena was helping.
Interning,
yeah. And I learned so much within 2 weeks of being in here that I could ever learn in college. Like, there's only so much, I suppose, theoretical stuff you can hear in college when you don't have the practicality to follow behind it. So when you come into a base like this,
into the real world,
like, especially media. And I think the thing is, media is totally different than any other industry.
I don't think so.
It
think you could learn, like, if I wanted to be an accountant 50 years ago, I didn't go to college to be an accountant. What I did was I went and I worked in an accountant's office.
Of course.
And learned, sat beside an accountant and learned the trade.
Yeah, but like that, not everyone can be an accountant. Like, I could never be an accountant because I struggle putting two and two together. Do you know, when it comes to numbers, I'm atrocious. So I don't think everyone can be an accountant.
I've noticed that actually when you put on my screen, Audrey, line one or line two, and she's actually on the opposite line. Yeah, but sorry, Audrey, I'll be with you in a second.
Oh, shots fired there, Boylan. But yeah, so I could never be an accountant. That was never my plan. I would have always worked in something to do with people. That would have always been my thing. And I think to be an accountant, I do think you have to go to college at some sort to learn the basics.
Okay, so you believe you have to. Well, see, but you're young, you're new school, you're not old school.
I'm not old school, you're right.
Yeah, now. So you know nothing more. I mean, that's all you know. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way.
Like I said to you, a lot of my friends are going on to do masters and all. So they have loads of things coming out of their name so they can, in order to kind of climb up the corporate ladder, as they say.
But do you really need all those letters after your name to get you a good job nowadays?
In a lot of places you do, yeah.
I think in technology companies they look for that. And maybe we've created this environment whereby companies are demanding these letters after your name. Whereas years ago, the only thing that companies demanded was a leaving cert or an intercert.
Yeah, but I think, you know, you need to look, especially now in this day and age, unfortunately, what we're going to see down the line now in a few months' time is there's going to be, like, a lot of jobs are going to be lost. There's going to be a lot of people looking for work.
Yeah, they expect 22 to 28% unemployment.
Yeah, and like that's the grim reality that we're facing. And, you know, if I was a college prospect coming out of that, I'd go, oh God, like I'm not only up against, you know, 10 people for a job. I'm up against nearly 50 people for a job now. And in order to get ahead of that, how do you differentiate yourself? you know, fair enough, when you get the interview, you can show yourself and, you know, people can go, look, she's bang on, I like her. But to differentiate, what's that word?
Differentiate.
There you go. Thank you very much. You need to be able to have the master's, the PhD, to show, look, yeah, let's give it to her. Let's give her an interview.
Okay. All right, we'll stay there for a second. Not you. You're not a caller. Sorry, I thought you were a caller there for a second. Thank you very much indeed, Aisling. Audrey, you're on Classic Hits.
Hi, Niall. How are you?
Audrey, I mean, do you think this whole idea of kids being just expected to go to college, many of them don't even want to go, they want to go and get a job in the big world, is there too much expectation of them to go to college when there's probably another route to getting a job anyway?
It depends on the circumstances, but for kids that are just leaving school, I think that some of them want it, some of them don't, but the ones that do go at that age of 17, 18, if you look at the statistics, most of them drop out because it's not what they wanted, or they're not interested in it, or it's not what they expected. And the ones that are dedicated and stay there usually don't even work in the industry that they are studied for.
Yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I don't think, if it was my son, I wouldn't put any pressure on him to do college after school, because the beauty of it nowadays is it's called lifelong learning. So if you want to go to college when you're 50, it's there for you. If you want to go to college when you're 30, it's there for you. There's no need other than if you want. It's not even about earning big money. If you go to college and get a degree and come out at 21, 22, you still start off at the bottom of the pay scale. I don't care what anybody says.
Of course you do. Yeah. You start off as a post-grad or something like that. Yeah,
you
yeah.
You know what I mean? So you don't, in the position that you're in, you're still working your way up. It's the employers that are looking for the letters after your name. So if you want to go and be a social worker, you know, and work for the likes of Tusla, you need that degree. You couldn't possibly.
But here's the thing: you didn't need that degree years ago. I mean, you went to Tusla, or it would have been Tusla in those days. It would have been the health service in those days. But you went to Tusla, and you basically started working there. They would send you then off on courses to learn this or learn that or the other.
There you go. It's courses, so they would pay for your education.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So that was the way it used to be done.
Responsibility now. They want you to be fully trained before you rock up there, so they don't have to pay anything towards your education.
But isn't there a huge amount of pressure nowadays on kids? So they're doing their leaving cert. It gets to about, you know, June or whatever. And then the mother and father are going, right, where are you going to go to college? And you're going, it's well, ridiculous. Maybe they don't want to go to college.
But that's ridiculous because, I remember at that age, there was loads of talk of all this stuff. And the amount of pressure that you have to decide what you want to be for the rest of your life. And the reality is that life happens over time. Experience teaches you. Words don't teach. Experience teaches you. So you get out there and experience life. You decide what you want to do as you go. If you're lucky enough to know what you want to do from early and you stay in it, you know, that's great. But that's really a low number of people that do that.
Yeah,
they don't really experience much life.
And the amount
that's
of kids,
that's why colleges want mature students, because they want people with life experience being brought onto the course and having their perspective there, because it's much more valuable than kids coming in with it.
Yeah, I mean, nowadays, I believe the arts, by the way, the courses for the arts are the ones that are the most dropped out of. And the reason for that is because they're generally kids. Not, I'm not saying all of them, but they're generally kids who have no idea what they want to do. Yeah. So they just go, I'll do the arts.
Exactly.
You know, and they drop out. Engineering has a high rate of dropout. There's a lot of courses that have high rates of dropout.
Yeah, they do. And that's because they don't know what they want to do. And they get in there and they enjoy the social life in there. And it's, you know, if they are in some way like social like that with college life. But when it comes to career-wise, sure, like, they don't know till they get out and experience it. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, do you think people need college? I mean, I know people who are hugely successful and they've never been to college in their lives.
But that was a different time now. Like, what you're saying is...
But it's not, it's now. I mean, I know people now in business, you know, who are running radio stations, who are presenters on television.
They began years ago now.
I mean, I never went to college for media. I never went to college for media.
So you have years and years of experience. Like, for me personally, I'm trying to get into that industry of speaking to Helena on the phone. And I was looking in the route in the last 6 months. Is it necessary to go to college for broadcasting and media? And it kind of...
I tell you what, if I was hiring somebody, and we have interviewed on many occasions for many different jobs that have arisen on the radio station here, and if I was hiring somebody in media, I would personally be much more prepared to hire somebody who's had experience.
With personality.
And a personality, yeah. And somebody with a bit of get up and go, that somebody has a load of numbers or letters beside their name.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Even if you have the get up and go and you have the life experience, you have all that, you still they're not really worth a shot behind that
no,
number.
That's not the way radio. I can tell you now, because I've worked in almost every radio in this city, right? And across, I've worked in one or two across the country, but mainly in Dublin. I've worked in radio, local radio in Dublin, right? And I've worked in 98, I've worked in FM 104, I've worked in Dublin's Country Mix, done a property show, I've done all sorts of things, right?
Yeah.
And I can tell you now that, generally speaking, radio stations are looking for people with experience. They're not looking for people with degrees and masters and all sorts of carry on.
So how do you get the experience without the qualifications?
Because you know how you get the experience? Quite simply. This advice for anybody who want to work in radio. And by the way, I would advise you, if you're going to work and you want to work in radio, the industry is getting smaller and smaller and smaller, as is television as well in this country. Media is declining. The industry is getting smaller. So it's getting more difficult. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't think it's ever going to disappear. But obviously, technology has made the industry smaller, because technology takes a lot of jobs. But I would advise people, if you want to get a job in media, ring your local radio station, say, I'll come in and make the tea every day.
I've done it, Niall, and I've been redirected to courses that you need to do this, this and this, and then come back to us. And that's a voluntary radio station. That's a community voluntary radio
station. But both Helena and Aisling, I mean, Helena obviously being the executive producer, Aisling being the producer of the show here, Mike Hogan, all of those people all started the very same way, including me, by going and working for free. Not college degrees.
Yeah,
I had no interest in the college degrees
so
they had.
I'm telling you, in my own personal experience, right, as of now, I've done what you're suggesting to do, and I've been told that's no problem, volunteer work, blah, 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 but once you arrive here with A, B and C qualifications, now not a full degree, but you have to complete certain qualifications to get there.
Well, I have never come across that situation in all the radio stations I've worked in.
That's what I'm saying.
They all look for experience.
But how did you get the experience with it?
By going in and making them tea. And I don't mean literally. I don't literally mean making the tea, by the way, but you understand what I'm saying.
So
Aisling and Helena, for example, and I hate to keep using them as an example, they started here, say, when Mike was the producer of the show. Ballyfermot College. They did, yeah.
Yeah.
But they weren't hired because they had, or they were doing a degree in Ballyfermot College. They were hired because they wanted to make the tea, essentially, if that's the way you want to put it, okay? So they were willing to get the experience.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so they came in and just answered the phone. And then you move from that to doing other stuff. Today,
I don't know when they came in, maybe 3 years ago, 2 years ago. But as of today, I've tried 3 different places and the same thing. I have to complete certain courses to get in the door.
Okay. Okay, that's
not a word of lie, honest to God, because if I could find an easier way, I would.
I'm just glad I'm not trying to get into radio now then, because that'd be doomed.
And there's loads of, it was funny because you were speaking about accountancy. Like, I did a year of accounts technician. I'm working in accounts at the moment. And like that, to be an accountant, there's no way to be a fully qualified, like an accountant, you could possibly do that without...
But people did years ago. People did years ago. They went and worked in an accountancy office, as you said, making the tea, and then sitting beside an accountant and learning their trade. That's the way people learn most trades, going back, 40 or 50 years ago.
Yeah, that was 40 or 50 years ago. So over time, things have evolved, things have developed. People have realised that things work better with people with qualifications, and that's what's happened.
Yeah, but we've also lost the ability to, for kids to do, apprenticeships, for example. We don't seem to see as many apprenticeships nowadays for mechanics and plumbers and electricians. Well, do me a favour, actually, stay there, because I want to come to Niamh in a second. Sorry, Niamh, I'm going to have to ask you to wait, because I have to go for a break before the top of the hour. Keep texting, keep WhatsApping, number's 087-188-0008. Or if you want to give us a call, you can, 1850-410-494. Niamh, you're on Classic Kids. How you doing, Niamh?
Hey, Niall, how are you?
How are you?
Good.
All right, everything go well with the return to school? I know you were worried, a bit of a wobble every now and again, but...
I was great leaving it in, and then I had a wobble in the car, and I'm okay again now.
Why did you have a wobble?
It was just that moment of, he's gone, he's back in school after 6 months.
Okay, can I reassure you? Because I want to make you feel better, because I'll be honest with you, right? I did hear you on the other fella's show. Good afternoon, and welcome to the Lloyd Line. I was driving home, Niamh, and I heard you, and I heard you're very concerned, and I know you were concerned in relation to it, okay? Your child has asthma, and that was your concern, wasn't it?
Mm. Yeah, but I did feel better, because I had dealt with the principal after that, so I was okay. I was grounded.
Okay, now I'm going to come back to the other topic in a second. Sorry, Andrea, I know we're going off on a bit of a tangent here, okay? Okay, do you know, I'm just curious, do you know what type of asthma your child has? Because some people actually don't even know. Is it allergic or non-allergic asthma?
It is bronchial and allergic. He has allergies to certain things, and he has lung damage from when he was a baby.
1 in 13 children have asthma. Okay, they say roughly that's what, it's about 7%. 1 in 13 children have asthma. The majority of them have what they call allergic asthma, which is they're allergic. So when they get dust, pollen, all those kind of things, it brings on their asthma. And asthma, by the way, is no fun. I can absolutely, you know, I know people who have asthma. It's no fun when you can have an asthma attack and literally feel like you're going to die unless you get a breath of air. And I can imagine what that could be like. And it'd be very concerning for a parent. But in relation to COVID-19, right, and this is what your concern was, is he more at risk or less at risk or whatever than anybody else in the class? And I looked this up a while ago because somebody else mentioned it to me. And I wanted to read this to you. This is from the Asthma Society, all right? There's evidence to suggest that breaking down the data by asthma subtype could reveal different risk levels. A recent study, this is one conducted by public health researchers at Harvard University, analysed two asthma subtypes, allergic asthma and non-allergic asthma, as separate risk factors. The two disorders induce similar symptoms, but are set off by different triggers. Allergic asthma obviously flares up by exposure to allergens like pollen or mould, while non-allergic asthma is exacerbated by exercise stress or cold weather. The population-based study, based on a study of 492,000 people with asthma, registered in the UK through Biobank, found that non-allergic asthma significantly heightened the likelihood of severe COVID-19. That's if indeed they got it. That's non-allergic. While allergic asthma did not, and showed no difference with people who didn't have asthma. In other words, there was absolutely no higher risk of people who didn't have asthma to those who had what they call allergic asthma. So if your child has allergic asthma, the chances are your child is not at more risk than anybody else of catching it, of dying from it. And I'd hate to say that word because it's a horrible word and it makes us all kind of shudder a little bit. Okay, so the chances are extremely slim, Niamh. And when you look at the figures across Europe, for 8 of the major European countries and America, 137 million children, that's up to the age of 19 years of age, 61 of them have died. Do you really think you'd be unfortunate enough that that would be your child?
No, I mean, I don't.
So what I'm saying is, and by the way, I gave you all that information because I want to try and calm you down because I know you're nervous as hell.
To be honest, I was, and I was a lot worse about a week and a half ago. I'm much better now. I've put my big girl pants on and I've stopped listening to shit.
Now, by the way, that doesn't take away the risk of your child just having asthma, obviously being a high risk of, you know, having respiratory problems because they have asthma. Obviously, that's something you have to monitor yourself. And you've always had to do that anyway.
Yeah. And to be honest, the school has been amazing. And that's what calmed me down. It was, I became a media junkie. I was getting myself hyped up. I'm sorry, I didn't have a bloody asthma attack and I don't have asthma.
Okay.
You know, I got myself too hyped up. I got myself too involved in all the shit that was being said. And I'm not even talking about the media. I'm talking about all the so-called experts that we have now. Listening to them. And then I made one phone call to somebody that actually knows what he's talking about, the principal of the school.
Yeah, of course.
And they sorted out, a plan with him. And he's fine.
Yeah, okay. Well, look, once you feel better about it, Niamh, that's all that
I
care
about.
All right, okay.
I feel better now, thank you.
All right, okay. Okay, and you can look up that research yourself, by the way. Yeah, I mean, it's up there, it's available. It was done in Harvard University in America. And basically, they said that children with allergic asthma were not at risk to COVID-19. Or when I say not at risk than any other child. Yeah. Now, if you have the non-allergic type of asthma, that can, of course, have complications if you catch COVID-19 because, obviously, that's to do with your body itself, you know, and stress and everything else. Mm. Okay, and your respiratory system. So, getting back to the topic at hand, Niamh, where was I? What was the topic? Oh, yeah, it was about education, of course. I mean, does it matter if you go to college or not? Do you think we put too much emphasis on college nowadays?
I wish it didn't matter, but it does. And I really wish it didn't because you could get two people going for the same job. One of them has a degree, the other one doesn't. The one with the degree could have the personality of a plank. Mm-hmm. The one who doesn't have the degree could be fantastic, but they won't even get an interview. Because you can't apply for a job when it says the minimum requirements are a degree.
But have we created this world where, in my day, a job would advertise and it would say minimum leaving cert, 4 passes, 3 fails, whatever. Where we've now created a society where jobs are demanding these letters, these degrees, because they know kids are going to college and colleges, you know, points have become currency now.
I don't think it's even kids. I mean, I went to college a long time ago, like when they were still writing with quills. And now I would give anything to get back into what I trained for. I'd give my right arm for it. But when I even, like Andrea said, when I even go and say I'll work for free, no, it's grand. Cause
well, that was Audrey, yeah, that was on a few minutes ago.
Sorry,
yeah.
Audrey, sorry. Yeah. I have a 17-year-old that can do that. You know, it's just impossible. And I would love it. And I know it's...
And what would you... I mean, if somebody said to you at the moment, you can have any job you want, what job do you think you'd enjoy?
I'd like to go back to what I was doing. I'd love your job, to be honest.
Right.
I wouldn't like
okay,
your
well
job,
then,
I don't have a thick enough skin.
Hang on for a second. Okay, you want my job, that's fine. Okay, Niamh, the next caller is Andrea. Far away. Off you go.
Hiya.
Hi, Andrea. Welcome to Classic Kids.
Thank you.
So, the topic this evening is about education, higher education. Do you feel that it's something that we're putting too much emphasis on? Are we putting too much pressure on our young people these days? Could we do it better?
Yes, I think we are putting a lot of pressure on kids nowadays. Not even nowadays, but when I was in secondary school, I said to your producer there, I'm in college now. I went back to college last year and I'm in my 30s. When I was 18 and I finished my leaving cert, I hadn't got a clue what I wanted to do. And I was under a lot of pressure from my parents to go to college because my older brother and sister had, but I didn't know what I wanted to do. Like, you know, I could have just went into an arts degree and then came out, not that there's anything wrong with an arts degree, but and just came out and been like, okay, what do I do now? And I felt, when I didn't go to college, but when I felt like I just got a job, I kind of felt like I kind of was the black sheep of the family. You know, like, because my mum and dad were like, oh, well, you know, my sister's doing this and my brother's doing that. Oh, Andrea just works.
And do you feel if you had had maybe an extra 4 years, maybe go out into the world, work, get some experience 100%. Together, try loads of jobs, 100%. And then get the option to go to college?
I don't think it's right that you're forcing a 17-year-old to make a decision that's going to shape their whole life.
Absolutely.
Like,
they're not even adults.
Sorry?
You're not even an adult. You can't vote.
Like,
you can't, but make a decision.
It has taken me 16 years to realise what I wanted to do in college. Like, I, in the past 5 years, like, since I had my kids, I realised, okay, the job I'm in, although I did work my way up really high, I was like, this isn't set in stone, I could lose my job tomorrow, and then I have to start from the bottom up. Like, and I was looking at jobs that would have had similar salary to what I was on, and they were all looking for degrees. And I was like, right, I need to figure something out. So I did a few courses in the area that I was interested in, and I realised, like, I did part-time courses. I started off in a level 5, and then I started off in and then I went on to do a level 6 part-time. And while I was doing my level 6, I realised, okay, I want to do this full-time. I want to just get my degree. And, I think it was less than a year into my level 6 part-time, I applied for the college I'm in now, and I got it. And it's the best thing I've ever done. I feel like I've now, it sounds stupid, but I feel like I'm now contributing to my family in a better way so that when I finish college in 3 years, I'm going to have my degree because everywhere is looking for degrees. Like, as Noah said, we have the pressure that has been put on students to go to college has conditioned what people are looking for, employers are looking for now.
Mm.
Because 10, 15 years ago, you were told you have to go to college to get a degree or employers won't hire you. And now employers will not hire you without a degree.
Okay, do me a favour. Sorry to interrupt you there, presenter Niamh. Just tell Andrea, to stay there for a second. Tell Andrea to hold and go to Michael.
Can you just hold on there 1 second? We're just going to go to Michael.
That's fine.
Hiya, Michael. Welcome to Classic Kids.
How are you, Niamh? How's things?
Hi. Not too bad. You heard Andrea there. You know, she's a mum. She's in her 30s. You know, employers don't seem to take into consideration that as a mum, she could probably run any corporation. She's been doing it. You know, do you think that there's too much pressure being put on people to have letters after their name instead of practical experience?
I would definitely think that because my own trajectory was I left school halfway through fifth year and I got an apprenticeship in engineering. So completed the apprenticeship out, got a fairly good trade. Now, when I left school, I was a cheeky little so-and-so. And the first company I went working in, there were a few guys in there, they were good and rough. And they knocked me into line, and they also taught me respect. And they taught me respect for the trade. and they also taught me a good trade. So I was able to put that trade in my pocket, and then I emigrated overseas before the boom here. Had brilliant jobs overseas, had me pick a jobs, had guys in employment agencies telling me, we could get jobs for 10 lads with your training and qualifications because we're not training guys with diverse qualifications anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, I worked for building oil refineries, biggest crane hire company in the world, travel the world, Saudi Arabia, Alaska, Venezuela, you name it. And, ended up coming back here then on family circumstances and got working here for a company that did work in the entertainment sphere and ended up building every big stage that came into Crow Park or DVIVA Stadium since 2012.
Oh. Do you think that things are different now? You said about how when you started on your trade, you had guys there that knocked the corners off you and licked you into shape. Do you think there's many people in and around the age of 17 and 18 that would, I'm not using the word tolerate, but wouldn't walk out and say, oh no, that's too hard. This guy shouted at me today.
No, I actually think they thrive in the environment because of sort of the way the lads did it.
Right.
Almost. You know, there was a great sense of camaraderie and everything in the place I was working. And I'd have actually been ashamed to walk out because it meant it was nearly like when you see Hell Week on the telly and the recruiter is giving the boys stick. And it's just pure determination. You're going, I'm not going to give you the pleasure of me walking out of here nearly.
Mm.
You know.
And do you think our teenagers these days, though, would have that steely spirit that you had? Because no, I have one, and I can tell you, I don't think she would.
You'd be surprised. I think we underestimate them. And I think one of the biggest problems with a lot of the teenagers I see walking around these is they're not actually really stimulated. Like, when I was in school, I was doing applied maths. And I was, low table, stuff it, triangle forces, not interested. When I went into trade school, and the guy who was teaching us engineering math said, right, this is a load table. Now, you need to know this if you want to balance a load you're lifting. This is a triangle of forces. This is how you calculate what size steel you need to use if you're making a roof truss. All of a sudden, I was, this is relevant.
Right.
By the way, just can we all give Niamh a big round of applause there? Because I think Niamh did an excellent job there for the last 15 minutes.
That was fun.
It was a bit nerve-wracking, wasn't it, Niamh? Yeah.
It was a little bit. I got into it, though.
Isn't this exactly what Michael was saying? And I'll say this to yourself and Andrea as well, that when you were thrown in, I didn't prepare that, quite literally at the deep end, you had to think really quick. So when you're in a job, and this is what I say, when you're put into a job and into that position, and I said this about Aisling and about Alina earlier on, you learn more than you would ever learn in college. And I don't know why we can't go back to that again. And that goes across the board. I mean, if you're talking about, you know, computer software, the tech companies, everything. Michael, we seem to avoid that now. We seem to avoid encouraging children to get straight into it.
I think we do. And maybe it's that we don't want to see them grow up, so we want to keep them in school.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, do you know? But I do think there's way too much emphasis put on a college degree in, as opposed to actually going out there, rolling your sleeves up, getting your hands dirty.
And apart from anything else, you could get your hands dirty, as Andrea rightly pointed out, for 2 years, and you might like the job that you thought you were going to like. If you go straight into college and do a degree in engineering, and then you decide 3 years later, actually, I don't particularly like engineering, I want to work in radio. I mean, Andrea, that's the point you were making, that maybe you're not mature enough. You've the rest of your life to do that if you want to.
Well, my sister's an example of that. Like, her job, she went to school and she did a degree, and she's absolutely fantastic at her job. She has a master's in it now, but she doesn't like her job.
So she hates it.
She hates her job, but she does it because that's what her degree is in. Whereas what I'm doing is I actually love what I'm doing in college. Like, I can't wait to finish and go out and actually work.
There's nothing worse, by the way, than being in a job that you don't like.
And I had that for 10 years. The only thing that kept me... Now, I love the people I work with, but when you peak in a job and you're not going to go any further, you're kind of like, okay, I need to do something else. Mm-hmm. And I think as well, it's like what Niamh was saying, if you get the kids to go out and maybe work for a couple of years, it'll give them a better work ethic as well. So when they do go to college, they'll appreciate it more. They'll know, okay, I need to do this. Whereas, you know, I've noticed when in my job I was a manager, and I noticed a lot of young people, and in my part-time job now I'm also a manager, I noticed a lot of the young people they don't really have that work ethic. They're kind of like, oh, I'm just doing
this. Yeah, see, here's the thing, and Michael kind of, maybe Michael didn't allude to it, but I think Niamh was kind of hitting that point. The millennials of today. Michael, do you think, and I'll ask you this, Steve, too, do you think they're kind of spoiled? That in the old day, when you went in and you didn't do the job right, the manager would say, you bleed, need you. What are you up to? Will you take that off the floor there, you tick? Whereas nowadays, a manager can't speak to you like that. You'd have him up before HR before you know it. So are we missing that? That we're not teaching children properly? We're kind of wrapping them up in cotton wool. They get triggered very quickly. I mean, is that a problem, Michael, first I'll ask you?
I think it is. And I think part of the reason with that is that when they're in college, they're used to always coming to the magic money tree, mammy or daddy. But from when I was 17, I was used to getting a wage packet every Friday.
As I was when I was 17, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, do you know? So if the lads I were working with, the manager or whatever, if they gave me a rollicking over something, I knew I could walk out the door. But I wouldn't get my wage packet on a Friday evening, so I wouldn't be able to go to the pub on a Saturday night or, you know, insure me bike or get petrol for the bike or whatever. Do you know what I mean?
And It's almost kind of like we're delaying and sending them into the big bad world. I think Niamh has said that as well. Niamh, you reckon we may be delaying it a little bit, trying to keep them in education, kind of keep them wrapped up in cotton wool, and maybe they are a bit spoiled, Niamh, are they?
I think so. I think it's a case that, you know, as parents, we can fall down a bit as well, where they come to us and say, oh, Billy the boss was mean to me today, and then we ring Billy the boss and give Billy the boss a bollocking.
Yeah.
But really, what we should be saying to them is, if you've got a problem with Billy, you go and you tell Billy you've got
a
problem
with him.
You're a big
boy now,
If you genuinely think you were in the right, stick up for yourself. If you're in the wrong, take it.
Yeah, I mean, you have to stop. You do have to stop fighting your kids' battles when they're 18. You know, it's because they are adults. It's not up to you anymore. You know, because I remember my own son, after he was 18 years of age, and he'd say to me, you know, oh, would you ring Aircom from there for me, or whoever it is for his phone? They're at the charging me this. I'm going, ring them yourself. You're over 18. You know what I mean? Deal with your own problems. You have to learn to deal with situations, and you have to learn to stand up for yourself. So if a boss is being an arsehole, you know, you have to learn to stand up and say, oh, shut your mouth or whatever. But you don't go running off crying. You know, I think kids nowadays, I think we overprotect them. From a very young age, from the age of 13 and 14, we don't let anybody insult them. Like, I'll give you an example. There was a guy on here 3 years ago. He was a troll, clearly, right? He was an arsehole. But he was on the show. And we were talking about people being called names and mental health problems. And it's something very serious. And he came on. And initially, I thought, when I hung up on him, that he was just being a plonker. But what he said, when I thought into it a bit deeper, made a lot of sense. Now, please don't think I'm taking what he said seriously, right? But I'm trying to give you an example. But he said, we should take all the children who are big, all the children with glasses, all the children who are this, all the children. He said, and put them in a room and just have somebody call them names. And I kind of got pissed off. And I said, don't be so stupid. And I hung up on him. But afterwards, I understood the point he was trying to make, badly, mind you, that maybe kids are just not used to somebody having a go with them because we protect them so much, maybe, Andre. Would that be the case, that kids are just not used to being in the big bad world?
I just want to clarify, I fall in the class of millennium, that word.
You're a millennial?
But I'm not.
Are you triggered? Do you get triggered really quickly?
I do not. See, that's the thing is, like, I'm in that category, and I look at people, like, younger. I'm older than them, if you get me. There's two categories of them. And I look at some of them, and I kind of, you know, look, do be a bit ashamed to be put in that category, because I have a work ethic. I've worked on, like, you know, I'm the type, again, I stand up for myself. I don't, you know, let anybody bully me. If I do something wrong, I take it on the chin. You know, I've done it.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely think, like, I'm seeing kids come in to work and they are definitely being mammy coddled. Like, you know, I've had a staff member's mom ring in when they were sick and they're 20 and you're like, hold on, why is your mammy ringing for you? why am I...
Niamh won't be in today, she's not feeling well.
Yeah, I'm like,
she's 42!
I wish I was.
I'm like, I have two kids and like, me and my partner, we're of the opinion, like, you have parents nowadays saying to their kids, you can be anything you want to be. You can't. You can be what you want to be, but you have to work hard at it. You can't just get what you want. You have to go out and you have to get that and work for it. And most kids nowadays aren't being taught that. They're just being told, you go out there and you can just get it. That's not the way it is. You have to work hard for it.
And you'll never be fired. Because don't worry, we'll take a case against the company. Let me just go to Barry. Barry here on Classic Kids. Barry, I have to say, I really like what Michael was saying about, you know, the old days, and you kind of have to just get out there and learn the trade. I mean, is that the way it... Oh, sorry, Barry, I just didn't switch you on there. Is that the way it should be?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I tell you what happened with me, right? My text when I went in, right? I was... Hang on, there's an echo there now.
Go on, you're okay. Go on, we can hear you all right. Go on.
Okay, I was about 15 years of age. I'm 50 now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was cycling out one day, and I went into Black Rock Castle. Do you know it?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, and I went in there, and I said, any summer jobs? And I started cleaning the toilets, and ever since I ended up, 10 or 15 years later, I ended up being assistant manager.
Oh, right. Well done. Well done to you.
I never thought it would happen to me.
So you started off cleaning the jacks, and now you're the assistant manager.
After 21st and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And I wouldn't say that was a pleasant job, but somebody has to do it.
But I didn't care, and it was £50 a week, just like what you said today earlier on.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, it was 1982.
Yeah, but that's what in 1982, I was working in a record shop on £50 a week. Yeah.
And I give my mother £25.
Yeah.
And I went up and up and up and up and up and up. I was there for 12 years. But then things went downhill with the economy and all that.
Yeah.
You know, and the castle closed down for about 6 years.
So what do you do now? Are you working there now, Barry?
Oh, no, it's gone now. It's good. I mean, yeah, that's a long time ago.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember if Black Rock Castle still. I do remember Black Rock Castle.
Coming down the motorway there, the dual carriageway.
Yeah. So are you working now, or what's the story with you?
Oh, I am, yeah. I'm still working now, but I'm varnishing floors now. I'm gone out to the catering.
Isn't this the thing, right? People like Barry, who didn't go to college, he lost his job, obviously, because the place closed down through the hard times. Now he's varnishing floors. So the point is, Niamh, he's adaptable. Whereas I find that most kids nowadays are not adaptable. And, like, if they lose their jobs, they won't go out and find work or make work for themselves. They wait for somebody else to give it to them 9 to 5. Do you understand what
it's
I'm saying?
It's totally different. I mean, that just reminded me what Barry just said there. I remember when I was 17, my mother said to me, go out and get yourself a summer job. Walk down to the local shopping centre. I came home with a job.
Yeah.
And it was washing dishes in a cafe, working for a German woman who was horrible. But I stuck it out because at the end of the summer, my mother said to me, if you make enough money, we'll go over to your auntie in England. And that, to me, was the highlight of everything.
Yeah.
I made £72 and we went.
Yeah.
And I was delighted with myself. And then I worked through college and everything that went with it. But nowadays, they apply online and they sit and wait for the phone to ring. I keep saying to my one here, you know,
just,
if you
take
in a
print
CV
off a load of CVs and just go.
Or if you've sent a CV in somewhere, walk in 2 days later and say, I sent in a CV. I was just wondering, has you a chance to look at it?
Any opportunity?
Because they'll
going,
remember your face.
Yeah.
They don't remember a nameless name on a piece of paper.
Oh, no,
they remember
I tell this to my kids, and I tell them, you know, you print off a load of CVs, literally go and ask for the manager and hand them. Yeah, sorry, Michael, yeah. Oh, Barry.
Barry here.
Yeah, Barry, go ahead.
When the castle closed down, okay?
Yeah.
I got the best references. I worked in the Midland Park Hotel. It stood to me then.
What was the name of the other hotel did you say? The Midland Park?
The Midland Park Hotel, your advertiser.
We do. And, yeah, I knew I heard the name before. Yeah. Yeah. But wait, can I ask Michael as well? Michael, what year did you say you started in the engineering?
About the same as yourself, Niall. It was 1982 when I was getting £40 a week. And I spent the first 6 months
the going rate.
Washing engines outside through the winter.
Right, and I'm assuming you're not on £42 a week now. I mean, in engineering, you can make quite a substantial amount of money now.
Well, I probably make more than most lads out there with degrees.
Yeah. And I know guys, you know, who didn't go to college, and girls, by the way, who didn't go to college, and are extremely successful now, and earning, you know, I mean, I know people on over 100,000 a year. You know, with their own businesses, maybe electricians who have their own companies now, contract companies. I know one guy who puts in alarm systems that he started off very basic. You know, he didn't really have college degrees hanging out of his, you know what, put in alarm systems. Now he's doing it on a mass scale, big offices, putting in CCTV and alarms, and he is making a lot of money. So, I mean, you can make money without having degrees.
But is that because it was before? Like,
no, he's not that old. He's not that old. He's only in his 30s.
But now, like, the places that I've applied to, literally, as you said, to work for free.
But you don't, if you want to be a computer programmer, you don't have to have degrees. I know the likes of, say, Salesforce and all the big tech companies will require a degree for you to get in. So that's fine. Open your own company. People don't seem to have the ability nowadays. Well, some do, but a lot of people don't have the ability to be entrepreneurs. I'll open up my own company. I'll set up my own website, you know, making apps for people or whatever. Open up your own company. And then you don't need degrees. You're the employer. Do you know what I mean? So it's thinking outside the box. I know that's a bit cliche. Sorry, Michael.
No, I'm just going to say I'd agree with you completely because I have doorstepped people to get jobs. And usually, I would say, I'll come, I'll do a day. If at the end of the day you're happy with me, I have a job and you pay me for the day. If at the end of the day or at any stage during the day you decide, no, this lad's full of it, I'll pack up my tools and I'll go. And I've yet to be in a situation where I went in and was sacked in the middle of the day.
Yeah, thankfully, touch wood, I've never been sacked from a job in my life.
Yeah, so, you know, it was just, I think it's true what, I think it was Niamh was saying, that a lot of stuff now, it's online, it's, HR has been eviscerated, it's all done now with algorithms.
Yeah.
So it's a check and see, oh, no degree, no box tick, boom, CV goes in the bin. But
and your CV, by the way, your CV is that that's what will get you a job in a lot of cases, a good CV. If you've got, and I don't mean having lots of qualifications on it. A well-written CD, a CD that's relevant to the job. There's nothing worse than you're advertising a job, say, as we'll talk about radio, and you're advertising a job, say, for a presenter or a producer or whatever for a show, and somebody sends in a CV saying they work in a hairdresser's and they had all this. That's completely irrelevant and that's not going to go get you anywhere. So you need to point out in your CV, forget about your hairdressing, that you have a huge interest in radio and talk about that aspect of it. Otherwise, the person reading the CV is not interested in you. And people just have this habit of maybe giving out generic CVs. You know, it wouldn't take you long to customise a CV for every single job you apply for. It wouldn't take you long to do it. Nowadays, with Microsoft Word.
One of the most disheartening things is when you, you know, because everything's gone online and, you know, the job I was doing went with COVID. And now I'm, you know, looking for other things, anything really.
Radio.
At this stage. Yes, please. Your job. But besides that, not even getting the dignity of somebody even just saying, thank you, we got your email.
Yeah, I know.
You know, it's very
disheartening, isn't it?
To 60 applications last week, right? And I don't know, you know, without sounding like I'm playing a violin, I don't know whether it's my age going against me or what it is, but nothing's coming back. And
do you put your age, do you put your date of birth on the CV?
Yeah.
You shouldn't.
You're supposed to?
No.
Should you?
No.
I'll take it off, so.
I wouldn't.
You don't put your date of birth, you don't put your marital status.
No.
Oh, no, don't do that.
All kinds of things you don't put, yeah.
No.
I'll take that off,
the one thing I...
And another advice for people, by the way, thinking about looking for a job, be very careful what's on your social media. Because I can tell you now, most employers or most people who are potentially looking for somebody will look at the person's social media to see what type of person they are. You know?
Do you think if you... Sorry, I'm asking advice here now. But do you think that if you... Say you were looking at me for a job and you looked at my social media and you saw that my page was private, would that put you off?
No.
Because I do that purposely because I just don't want people seeing
anything. It wouldn't put me off at all. But if I looked at your page and I seen that you were, you know, I don't know.
Political. Highly political.
Well, no, not highly political. That's okay if you're coming into a job like this. Probably it's probably all right. But it depends on what you're saying. If you look like you're the kind of triggered type person, I wouldn't be interested. So, but some other employers might be. You know what I mean? I don't know. But so, what I'm saying is, it's important what's on your social media if people have access to it because they can make their mind up about what you're like before they even get to interview you. So it is important. You know, I mean, if people look at my social media and I was going for a job, they'd probably just think I'm a head case and not give me one. You know what I mean? So, So, I mean, my social media tells an awful lot about me, but unfortunately my social media is because of this show, so it can be quite angry by times. But listen, I have to wrap it up. Thank you very much indeed. Listen, Andrea, Michael, Niamh and Barry, thank you. Barry, best of luck, and I hope your varnishing goes well for you and you make lots of money.
And listen, you know what, you smooth my mind every night by the way you break out your speech.
Thanks very much indeed, Barry. By the way, Michael, just finally on that, thank you, Niamh. Michael, finally, oh, lots of people texting in, I should give Niamh some money for appearances, for as a guest appearance on the show. Yeah, you never know.
I'm very reasonable.
Okay. Michael, just in relation to your engineering, and you're saying you're putting in stages, and obviously, you know, you're doing rigging and stuff like that now.
Yeah.
I mean, that business must be doomed at the moment, is it?
Oh, it's on its ass, but luckily, the travelling was too much because I'm caring for an elderly relative here as well. So,
oh, right, okay.
I kind of got out of it just before it collapsed. But it's dead in the water, and like we were used to.
Yeah, I'm a bit obsessed with it because when I go to gigs, I love the whole, you know, aspect of the rigging. I'm always looking at the rigging and how it's set up, you know, and how it's done. I'm always saying to myself, what would happen if something fell down? You know, and I'm surprised that when you see, say, ELO on tour, which they had a wonderful rig right here in the Three Arena. And I know the first time they came over, there was a problem with the rig. It wouldn't fit. And that's why they had to delay their concerts for 3 or 4 months or something like that. But considering they're popping that rigging up and the following night they're playing in Belfast, say, for example, is it really that safe that you have rigging that's kind of up and down on a nightly basis, like serious rigging?
It's 100%, because all the lifting points are on a 5-to-1 ratio. So if there's 100 kilos hanging out of it, the lifting point will take 500.
Okay, so it has to overcompensate, essentially.
Oh, it's engineered to within an inch of its life.
Okay.
So it's once it goes in right, it's
But isn't this the whole thing? You've got roadies. I don't know what they're still called, roadies now. You call them engineers these days. But you've got roadies who are maybe knackered, tired, a little bit of partying the night before, maybe. I don't know. And, you know, would they push that pin in properly? You know what I mean?
Always, because you would actually be surprised, but there is actually very little partying goes on among the crew that actually does that type of work, because we realise, like, there have been events. There was a rigger fell out of the roof in a theatre in Glasgow because he wasn't clipped on. We all wear harnesses and we clip on when we're up there. And he landed on a guy on the ground. He killed a guy on the ground.
Oh, no.
And he's badly broken up. There was an Adele concert where a rigging chain came loose from the ceiling and came down and hit a member in the audience. A lamp fell on Bruce Springsteen years ago. But 99% of the time, we don't party.
Yeah.
We party during the winter.
And so what was your job? You were putting the stage together, essentially.
I started driving a fork for them, but I had working on height certificates and all that, so I ended up in the rafters doing the rigging as well. And
would you be up there for the gig then?
No, we'd be up there, like, we'd say we'd come in around 6 or 7 in the morning.
Yeah.
And we'd prep out, do all the marking out. Then the trucks will start arriving, the unloaders will unload them. We'll be up in the rafters and we'll rig the points up there. Then we're usually gone by about 11 or 12 o'clock. Then the sound check comes in, blah, 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 all that stuff happens.
And the stuff that you see coming on the truck, say, and I go back to, say, ELO again, because they're a great stage show, right? So they might have 4 trucks. Do they have all the staging, the sound, everything with them, or do they rent that locally and it's put in?
Or it all comes with the crew. Like, Bruce Springsteen had 22 trucks.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, do you know, like, a stage for Robbie Williams could have 20, 25 trucks. I mean, there's more steel in these stages than I've seen in most buildings in this town.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
some of the stage setups are incredible. The best one I've seen from a stage setup point of view was in the Aviva, go back a few years ago, which was Roger Waters' The Wall.
Done it.
It was incredible.
Yeah, there was bits that dropped out and everything, like sitting rooms and all sorts.
That's right, the sitting rooms were up because the wall was being built in front of the sitting room. And the wall was polystyrene, obviously, and they knocked the wall down at the end. So even
boxes.
Huh, sorry?
Cardboard boxes.
Oh, there were cardboard boxes.
Yeah.
Which were painted to look like a wall. But the projection, I don't know how many projectors they had, but it must have been like 30 or 40 projectors projecting this onto this. The wall was the width of the Aviva Stadium.
Yeah.
That was an incredible, well, more credit to you, by the way, if you were involved in that, because that was an incredible rig.
Did you see Beyonce?
I didn't, no. I would. Aisling just said to me, or she did, I'd have to be dragged to see Beyonce. But.
Well, in fairness, I have, like, because we can get in and see the gig.
Okay.
Beyonce was one of the ones where nobody did. We were all sitting outside. But it was a 60-foot-high rotating steel cube, there was a video wall on the Beyonce rig.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this thing was the size of a block of flats, and it rotated slowly. And that came on the back of trucks. We put it together, and it got dismantled, and it got sent off again to the next gig
for the next night.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's incredible, isn't it? I mean, you're obviously under time pressure as well. There's obviously a foreman of some description that says, listen, lads, this all has to be down in 2 hours. We're leaving the boats in 4 hours.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And, like, again, we would know that. But, again, it's so well planned.
And would they have, maybe I'm wrong in thinking that, say, you know, these big bands like the Roger Waters, which would have big rigs, would they have two sets of gear? So they're playing in Dublin tonight and maybe Berlin the next night. So they would have another set of gear going up in Berlin, and then the set from here then goes to, say, France for the night after. Do they have two sets or just the one?
They do. They'll have two, and sometimes they might even have three if there isn't enough space between.
The gigs. Right, okay.
Now, usually when they come to Ireland, we'll say something that hits the O2, I'm going to give them the old names,
yeah,
and the SSE up in Belfast, that would be the same gig. They're murder, because we'll go to Belfast, we'll be in for 6 in the morning, we'll build it, we'll get a few hours off in the afternoon, evening, we'll come back in at 11 o'clock, we'll drop it, we'll get into the cars, we'll follow it to the O2, to the point, we'll be in the next morning for 7 o'clock, we'll put it in, we'll hang around for the day, we'll come in that night at 11 o'clock, and we'll drop it all in, and then we'll go home.
Right. It's hard work.
It is, and you see...
Is it good pay, Michael? I don't know how much you get, but is it worth it? Like?
Yes, it is. It is. It's well worth it. They do look after us well. That's
one. And do you ever get to meet the celebs?
Occasionally you would, but not officially.
Mm.
But some of them would actually, they wouldn't really come out of their way to meet you, but if you were walking down a path and they were walking down the same path, they wouldn't avoid you.
Yeah.
And you'd be surprised who the nice ones are. And who the pigs are.
Right, okay. Who are the pigs?
Give us one. I'd rather not say.
give us one who is... who is less than friendly.
Where can we see? Madge. Rihanna. Rihanna fired a lad because he wasn't able to keep a stage dry in the wet.
What? Yeah. I went to the Slane gig. I mentioned this the other night, actually, to Madonna. And it was raining, and she delayed the gig by like 3 hours because she wouldn't come out in the rain. There was no support act, so people were getting very boisterous and pissed off. The guards were getting pissed off because the gig was obviously running late, and which was going to be a huge problem for Slane. Eventually, she came out about 9 o'clock. She was supposed to be due on stage at 7:30 or 8. Came out about 9 or 10 o'clock, and she had a bouncer standing beside her with an umbrella for the whole gig. And it wasn't pissing; it was just drizzly. Like, it was Ireland.
Right. Well, mad.
Yeah,
mad. But funnily enough, one of the nicest guys I ever met was Tom Jones. He's an absolute...
I would imagine gentleman. He is, yeah.
He's a gentleman.
Right. Well, I'm not surprised by Madge, by the way, because a lot of people have said that about her. She's quite difficult to work with. Thanks. It's been interesting talking to you, Michael, and a very interesting job.
No worries.
Thanks very much indeed. There you go. All right. Well, look, we went off on a tangent there.
Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic Hits.